Thanks for listening to this podcast of Trending with Timmeray from the Relevant Radio app. Anything you share in terms of episodes, whether it's texting it to a friend, posting on social media, helps to build up the kingdom for God, to help confront the challenging issues we face as a culture, but with joy, with hope, and with an eternal perspective where our faith collides with everyday life, bringing eternal principles to help us live our life joyfully.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmeray on Relevant Radio.
Have you heard of MAID in Canada? Many people who are struggling with everything from PTSD may be in need of a wheelchair because they can't walk anymore. Instead of being offered and given the resources through health insurance and the programs they have in Canada, they're being offered what's called MAID. That's medical assistance in dying. Bottom line, it's suicide. We live in a culture where suddenly suicide is called assisted dying with medical professionals. We live in a culture where everything from euthanasia to assisted suicide is considered compassionate care. Another choice of just not living anymore, a way out. I've followed over the last month startling stories in the Netherlands of two young women, healthy young women, who have been allowed, in the face of struggling with mental health challenges, have been allowed to commit suicide. One on April 5th. I'll share a little bit about the stories later on. And another coming up this week. If you'll pray for Jolenda Fun. Jolenda Fun's 34 years old and plans to commit suicide via these medically assisted dying programs any day now here this week on her 34th birthday. And it's a tough topic. It's not one that's fun to talk about, but it is a time where we have to be able to speak to the next generation and be able to communicate to them that life is worth living while everywhere from California to Denmark and Canada endorse death by suicide of the suffering and the young. Joining me today to dive into this topic to explain what is so-called medically assisted dying is Wesley J. Smith. He's a chairman of the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. He's also the host of the Humanized podcast. You can find him in his work. He's author of numerous books. You can check out some of his work at humanized.today. That's humanized.today. And he's with me today to start with just what is assisted dying? Because maybe you've heard it before. Someone might say, well, grandma's suffering. We want to help her. It's become a much bigger issue than that with, as I mentioned, just this month, two young women in their 30s in the prime of life has already committed suicide this way, and another will any day now. Wesley J. Smith, thank you for coming on and taking up this really challenging but important topic for our future.
Thank you, Timmeray. Good to talk with you. We should never use the term assisted dying or medical aid in dying because those are euphemisms that the pro-death people use to deflect from what is really going on. And what is really going on is either assisted suicide, which means generally a doctor will give you a prescription for a lethal overdose of drugs, or euthanasia, where the doctor, and this is in most countries, not in the United States, where the doctor gives you a lethal injection, homicide. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about killing as an answer to suffering, and that leads to very dark places.
It's so sad because I remember in California when we were fighting this well over 15 years ago, and I remember with the incredible voices of people who are struggling with everything from mental health challenges to long-term permanent diseases, they spoke up. They shared why life was worth living. They shared about the depression and sorrow that occurred in the waves of terminal illness. And they helped to change the course. I remember being involved in lobbying at the time in California to actually get authors of some of these pro-suicide bills to be pulled. And then we saw it be snuck in through a bill that really had nothing to do with assisted suicide in California. And suddenly it became the law of the land here in California with a recent attempted expansion. And it's startling to see what's happening, especially if you look to what's happening in Canada. And I know we'll share some of those stories a little later on. But for people who maybe this is a newer topic or maybe it's come up a little bit, again, people are calling it medical assistance in dying. As you say, this is not assistance in dying. This is either murder where the physicians are committing it themselves, or it is suicide on the part of the person, I guess you could say, quote, choosing it. Why isn't this an option today? And what's wrong with it? And it's silly to even have to ask that question, but it has to be teased out today. So if you could dive a little bit more into this, Wesley, I would appreciate it.
Sure. where do I start? You are abandoning people when you legalize assisted suicide. You are saying that for some people, we will give suicide prevention. Some people who might be suicidal will give suicide prevention. But then you say, oh, wait a second, I have cancer. Oh, well, then here's your pills. You are basically creating a killable caste, C-A-S-T-E, of people. And it isn't intended by many people to be an abandonment, but it is. When you say to somebody, yes, I agree, your life is not worth living. I agree, suicide is your best approach. You are basically telling them that their worst fears are true. And why do people commit assisted suicide? And this is according to statistics, whether it's in Oregon, whether it's in Canada, whether it's in the Netherlands, where euthanasia has been practiced for many years. It's not because of pain that can't be relieved. Pain is very rarely the issue. The issue is existential anguish. Things like, I don't want to be a burden. Things like, I'm worried that I will not be able to live a dignified life, or I will be unable to do things that I enjoy. And instead of helping them through the darkness, like we might do with a teenager who wants to kill him or herself, let's say because of a broken romance, or a mother who might want to kill herself because her child was hit by a car, instead of helping people with disabilities or terminal illnesses or chronic illnesses, depending on your jurisdiction, we say, yes, death is the answer for you. And basically, we do not give those people suicide prevention. We do not intervene to help them get past the darkness. And it is a true, unintentional, but a true opposite of compassion. Compassion means to suffer with. This isn't suffering with anybody. This is discarding people. And suffering with people is when we visit people. Hospice can be, if it's done correctly, is the proper approach to caring for people with terminal illnesses. Giving them poison pills to take is not.
And you have these different camps where you have people who are in favor of assisted suicide for the terminally ill and the elderly. And then you have those same people who are viscerally against the so-called medical assistance in dying for the young, because that's what we're seeing in the places such as the Netherlands. As of February 1st, they're now allowing for parents and physicians together to euthanize, to kill children of any age. It used to be that 12 years old and up was a requirement for a parent to decide if they felt like the child's life was experiencing too immense of a type of suffering, even just mental health suffering. And now you're seeing, even in places such as Canada, where 12 years and up is also the norm, where it's scary. Kids have such a tendency towards suicide today, Wesley. And in Canada, in the Netherlands, if a child is struggling with suicide, it might be checked into what we call here in California, a 5150 program, where they are being not just medically monitored, but monitored for their safety to help prevent them from committing suicide. Today, an offer is available to them for so-called medical assistance in dying, instead of helping to protect these children and adults from suicide today. And so it's interesting to see that you have these two camps where some people say, I'm okay with assistance in dying at the end of life, but I'm not okay with it for the young. Yet at the end of the day, it really is the same thing.
Well, yeah, you can't, there's no logical reason to limit assisted suicide to the terminally ill adult, because you're transforming it into, quote, a medical treatment, which of course it isn't legitimately, but that's what the law does. It says, well, this is now a medical treatment. Well, is there any medical treatment that you can give to an adult that you can't give to a child? Generally speaking, no. If a child gets cancer, they can get chemotherapy just like an adult. If a child gets a broken leg, their leg can be set just like an adult. In terms of children, in the Netherlands, which has had the longest experience with euthanasia, they've done away with all age limits and they engage in infanticide. There's something called the Groningen Protocol, Groningen. And this is a bureaucratic checklist about which babies can be killed in their bassinets. And it is not limited to babies who are born with terminal illnesses, but often babies that are born with serious disabilities. And as you said, they've recently changed the law to allow children of any age to be euthanized. And the same is true in Belgium. It's not yet true in Canada. There is agitation now to allow Canadian children to be euthanized. There's even agitation for what is called a mature minor to be able to be euthanized without parents' knowledge or consent. Now, that is not yet happening, but there's been much advocacy for it in the Canadian pro-death movement and even in some medical journal articles. But what is true is that in the Netherlands, in Belgium, and in Canada, it is certainly not limited to people with terminal illnesses. And why would that be? Because euthanasia and assisted suicide is about killing as a response to suffering. And there are a lot of people with a lot of conditions who suffer far more than people with terminal illnesses and for far longer. And so in the Netherlands, just as an example, they've gone from killing the terminally ill who ask for it to the chronically ill who ask for it to people with disabilities who ask for it to elderly people who are frail who ask for it to elderly people now they're moving towards who are, quote, tired of life, to people with mental illnesses, and they even conjoin organ harvesting with the euthanasia of people with mental illnesses and neural disabilities in Belgium and in Canada. They also conjoin.
What does that part mean for those who maybe don't understand?
Meaning they somebody wants euthanasia, they go to the hospital, they're killed, they're wheeled into an adjoining surgical suite, and their organs are taken. In Ontario,
with or without
Canada.
Consent.
No, with consent. Okay. But it's still, you're giving somebody a reason, especially somebody, let's say, with a mental illness, who is having a terrible time getting through the night. And they say, well, I'm having an awful life, but if I get killed and I donate my organs, some other people can be helped. And that can be the tipping point that has somebody with a serious medical condition or mental health issue to decide to be killed. There was a case just about 2 months ago, 3 months ago in the Netherlands, a 16-year-old woman, young girl with brain cancer decided that she wanted to be euthanized so she could donate her organs. That was a primary purpose of her agreeing to be euthanized. And they put her into a coma for 36 hours. That wasn't for her benefit. It was to try to do tissue testing, and to try to find compatible donors. So once you decide that we're also beginning to see that you are killable, then you become objectifiable, meaning you can be looked upon as a natural resource, an organ farm ripe for the harvest. In Ontario, Canada, and I know we'll talk about this a little more later, if somebody qualifies for euthanasia, the doctor contacts the organ donation network. The network then contacts the patient and says, can we have your liver? Can we have your kidney? Meanwhile, nobody from suicide prevention is notified, and the patient is never given that option of suicide prevention.
It is overwhelming that this is even a choice today, that this is the conversation we're having, that people would even consider using this on the terminally ill or the elderly, and now perfectly healthy individuals, as you share that story of the 16-year-old. And we'll share more on that, because I think it is important to see how far this has come. What happens when society accepts the killing as a solution to human suffering. And when you said it a few minutes ago, it just really hit home. When suddenly suicide is offered as a medical treatment, of course it has to be offered to children, because we allow treatment for adults to be given to children. And this is the solution people are coming up with. And the stories of some of these young women is startling to hear. And it is a lot of women whose stories I'm hearing about right now when it comes to suicide, which is interesting to me, just kind of on the side, thinking of how it's predominantly young women coming out as transgender as well. There's this real struggle with identity and seeing value in life today. That's why I want to take this on a little deeper in just a moment, of looking at what happens in society and how this ties into our faith as well. Because you have to have, as part of the basis for assisted suicide, you have to have this idea that Christianity is a lie, that there is no life after death, that there is no meaning to life, that we're not in this place responsible for the way we live. Now, we had a question come in. Frank in Philadelphia is on the line. He actually disagrees with us. Frank, welcome to Trending. What's your question or comment for Wesley today?
Hi, Timory. Hi, Wesley. My comment is, I don't agree with the gentleman. I have a lot of medical problems, and I'd be totally in favor of the medical aid in dying if it was available, not right this second, but I mean, I wasn't available, so maybe in a week or a month or two, I could use that option, because I need help to do everything. I can't do things myself. I spend most of my day laying in bed, sitting on the couch for a couple hours a day. That's pretty much it, and it's terrible, and I wish I could die. So why did Wesley think that should not be an option?
Well, I think you should be able to refuse medical treatment if you don't want it, but you should not be able to harness the medical system to make you dead. That's not what the medical system is for. The medical system is to care for people. And I would urge you, if you're having a life that sounds very difficult, what resources have you reached out to find some help, to find people who will be with you, to befriend you, and to help you? I mean, this is a Catholic radio station. Nobody should be allowed in any parish of a Catholic church to die alone, or to be, it sounds to me as if you have disability, to be disabled and be abandoned and be isolated. A lot of people want to kill themselves because of isolation in these circumstances. And I hope that you have resources in your area that you could reach out for people to be with you rather than to help kill you. And I don't understand why some people will say, well, I'm not getting proper care from doctors, but I'll trust those same doctors to end my life. That makes no sense to me.
Frank, if you're still there, I would like to hear your thoughts on this.
Are you there still?
Yes, we can hear you.
I thought I was muted. I did see every specialist for the last 24 years. I just keep going downhill. They didn't know what it was. Then they said autoimmune, now they call genetic mutation. I live with my mother right now because I had to leave my house because I couldn't do it myself no more. I'm going to end up in a home someday. I don't want that option. And it stinks. I mean, I used to be a nurse. I know what happens in those places. I don't want that option. If I can't get better, let me go. That should be my right. There's nothing doctors can do. It's a chronic condition. It gets worse with time. As bad as my life is today, it's worse tomorrow. Every time I get used to it, a week or two later, it's worse than it is today. I'm tired of adjusting all the time to a new worse.
All of us can have empathy with that, but this issue is more than what you're discussing. How does it impact the society if we decide that it's okay to give you poison? How does it affect people in your neighborhood and in your community? How does it affect your family? How does it affect how we look at the sanctity of human life? It has a huge impact. And so while I would hope that people could reach out to you and help you, and I understand, I mean, I'm not experiencing what you're experiencing, but it's very hard. It isn't, honestly, and I'm being blunt here, it's not just about you. This is a huge issue that impacts everything. Suicide rates are increasing, and there have now been studies that show that when you legalize assisted suicide and when you advocate for assisted suicide, that increases suicides that are not involved with the assisted suicide issue in the sense of health issues. So you have a crisis, as Timmery was saying, of children and young people being suicidal. So your circumstance is crucial and important, but it's also not the only thing we have to consider. We have to consider the general welfare, and assisted suicide and euthanasia is awful for the general welfare.
And Frank, you share that you live with your mom, and you mentioned that while you need this on-the-clock care, and now, you know, one day you were afraid. You don't want to be in a nursing home. You don't want to be in a care facility. You've seen some of the harms and damages and the terrible grievances, and I get that. I've seen it as well. But one, your mother loves you enough that she's caring for you now, and while you can see that, and you even said that you don't want access to the ability to engage in assisted suicide today, but you might want it in a week or two or a month from now, that's a very arbitrary response, and it's a very emotional response. And I just encourage you, I know there's fear of the unknown, and I can't imagine what your circumstances are like. I've not lived them, but what I do know is that being able to have a choice that is deadly for yourself and heart-wrenching for those people who love you, and I know there are people who do because your mom is there caring for you. I understand she might not be there one day, but that fear of the unknown and that emotional response to a change of circumstances shouldn't determine whether or not your life is valuable. And this is the same challenge we have with the pro-abortion movement, in that they say, well, that person's life isn't worth living because circumstances change and their quality of life would be different. And what we're saying is that your value has just as much life as my life's value or my child's life's value, and that we are not the summation of our contribution to the world, and we're also not the summation of our inability to care for ourselves as well. I'd love to hear your thoughts, Frank.
Yeah, Timmery, just to let you know, I came to my mother's house 5.5 years ago after a fire. Not my house, but my house got damaged from it. She yells at me on a regular basis to get the blank out of her house, blah, 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 blah. She does not want me here. And I tried going back to my house, but I can't do it. I just can't do it. As far as family goes, Wesley, my family doesn't know who I am. I mean, they know who I am, but I'm in my 50s, they're in their 40s. We all... it's a shame Frank died, but he's in a better place. That's what they would say, and I would be in a better place. I don't want to die. I just rather die than be where I am right now.
Well, the issue has to be how to help you get out of where you are right now. That's got to be the issue. Do I have time to tell a story?
Go ahead.
I was a hospice volunteer back in the late 90s, and my first patient was a fellow named Ernie. And Ernie was in his 90s, and I had 8 weeks of training to be a hospice volunteer, where you basically hang out with people who are dying, and you provide, you know, whatever they might need in a particular circumstance. So I went to Ernie's house, and this was in California. I lived in California in those days, and this was before assisted suicide was legalized. And I went in, and Ernie's son brought me into his bedroom. And as soon as Ernie's son left, Ernie fell into my arms crying. And he said, "I want to die. I want to die. I want to die." And I said, "Ernie, why do you want to die?" "I'm a burden. I'm a burden. I'm a burden." He was in anguish because he was worried about being a burden on his family. And I said, "Ernie, you're not a burden. Your son loves you. Your daughter-in-law loves you. I'm a burden. I'm a burden." I, of course, told the hospice team because I was trained. And in those days, suicide prevention was as crucial in hospice as providing pain control. But I would see Ernie once a week for 4 hours. And I would come on different days of the week. And I was amazed at how many people in the neighborhood loved Ernie. I mean, people were coming by with cookies, with souffles, you know, the whole bit. And there was and I watched as Ernie's demeanor, he had a very serious congestive heart failure. I watched as his demeanor improved because he was being loved and he was being accepted. And there was one fellow there, I don't remember his name, but he would come, every time I was there, he would come. So he must have visited Ernie most days. And I'll call him Joe. And I would, when Joe would come and visit Ernie, I would leave the gentlemen to speak to themselves, by themselves. And I would hear, Joe had a very heavy voice, and I would hear him say, Ernie, you got to fight. You got to fight. You got to fight. Well, one day I lost Ernie. He didn't die. He got kicked out of hospice because he got better. And that doesn't often happen, but it did with Ernie. And at the last time I saw Ernie, because he was no longer in hospice, he was an Italian gentleman, and he played the mandolin for me. And he said to me, Wesley, you know my friend Joe? And I said, yeah, I know Joe. He said, you stay away from Joe, Wesley. I said, why? And Ernie said, he's an undertaker. And we laughed. But I can promise you that if assisted suicide had been legalized when I first visited, and he was saying, I want to die, I want to die, I want to die, he would have taken those pills. And he would have missed some marvelous aspects at the end of his life. And I would urge the caller, don't yield to the darkness that I totally understand why you feel. Try to find ways around it, and try to find some loving, caring people who will intervene, suicide prevention and so forth, because your life can be worth living. I also had a friend in hospice with Lou Gehrig's disease who had been suicidal, and which we could, of course, understand. And he came out of it. He said, Wesley, I came out of the darkness and into the light. And he was so glad that he hadn't committed suicide and that he lived until he died a peaceful death. And I was able to have the honor of giving his eulogy. So there is a future if we grasp it. It can be very hard, but it does exist.
And Frank, are you Catholic by chance? I know you're listening to Relevant Radio, but are you Catholic?
Yes, I'm Tim Marie. I'm born and raised Catholic grade school, Catholic high school, older boy. My church is now Mass by Relevant Radio, and I have a priest comes Mass once a month for confession and communion. He was here today.
Praise God. Praise God. Well, I want to start by telling you, just on a personal note, that Wesley and I are two people who care so deeply about this issue, but not just this issue, but specifically people like yourself who we don't even know. And by the grace of God, you called today, and I have the opportunity to talk to you. And I hope that you know that why we fight this and why we bring this up is because we care about you and your life and the great value you have. And as a Catholic who clearly cares about your faith, and that you have a priest coming monthly to receive Holy Communion and to go to confession, I know clearly that your faith matters to you and that you clearly do want to go to heaven. And I challenge you, remember the church's teaching that suicide is not a way out. And yes, God is all merciful, but God also holds us accountable, and that Jesus Christ didn't hang on that cross and halfway through come down. He hung on that cross those full 3 hours. And I hope and pray that you can be there with Christ and embrace the horror, but also the beauty of your suffering, offering it for those who are suffering, who you know personally, whose stories you hear of people you don't even know, and that you pray and trust that God will send someone into your life through your fidelity to him and his grace and mercy. And I want you to know, Frank, I'm going to be praying for you. I know Wesley will be praying for you. And I know today is not the day where you're saying, hey, I want a way out today, but I want that option later on. But I want to challenge you to trust what the church teaches and say no to physician-assisted suicide, and pray that God will give you the grace and understanding to come to know that. And I think you're going to be a real big advocate for why this isn't an option for us as Catholics, but why it's not an option for anyone. And if you're listening right now and maybe you're struggling, you want this as an option, you are maybe struggling and suicidal, I do want to put out that line right now for the suicide help hotline. The phone number is 988. That's it. Just three numbers. The suicide hotline is 988. Frank, I'm praying for you. We got to get to the break here, but we're coming right back to discuss what happens when society accepts killing as a solution to human suffering. Joining me today is Wesley J. Smith, the chairman of the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. You can find him online at humanize.today. That's humanize.today. I'll be right back.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmery
on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
What happens when society accepts killing as a solution to human suffering? We'll discuss that in just a moment in light of the push worldwide today for so-called medical assistance in dying. It's suicide, whether it's suicide of the person asking for the pills or the physician themselves committing murder and killing people through euthanasia. It's a real challenge. And Frank called just a few minutes ago, and we're going to be praying for Frank. He's with us and saying that he wanted access to be able to commit suicide in this way. And Frank, if you're still with us, I just want you to know that the lines have been ringing off the hook with people across the country who would love to speak with you, who are praying for you, who just are reminders that God is with us in our suffering, the value of redemptive suffering, and that one thought that Eric from Fort Wayne, Indiana said, he said, we have the right as Christians, we have all these rights that have been given to us, everything's been given to us, but that doesn't necessarily mean we have the right to all things, and we absolutely don't have the right to end our lives or the lives of others. We're created to bring life into existence, not to end it, not to take life out of existence. And that's what this potential is for. Our potential is for good, not for bad. And sometimes we think that, well, if we do something that so-called just impacts me, myself, and I, that there's nothing wrong, but it does impact others. There's no such thing as an act in absolute isolation and without any wound to others, but especially still acknowledging that God cares about us so much that he would never want us first to commit that wound toward ourselves as well. You're listening to Trending with Tim Murray here on Relevant Radio. Joining me today is Wesley J. Smith. He is the author of numerous books on this topic and others surrounding human rights and the value of the human person. He's a chairman of the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. You can find him at humanize.today. That's humanize.today. And part of what I want to dive into, Wesley, I've been startled over the last month hearing these stories that I think that the news really does cover up. We've not been hearing as many of them, but lately two stories of two very young women. One is in the Netherlands, Jolanda Fun, whose 34th birthday is this week, and she's used it as a day to schedule for her death. She says that she's sad, down and gloomy. She's had some mental health challenges facing from about the age of 22 with things including eating disorders and being on the autism spectrum. And she's struggled to keep a job. And now 34 years old in the coming days, and she's scheduled to commit physician-assisted suicide. And she made a comment, Wesley, that just says, I want to step out of life. It's so flippant, as if that's all that's happening. And so I would like to discuss now what happens when assisted suicide becomes the norm in our world and how this is seen and evidenced in Jolene Fun's story. And we'll be sure to pray for her. I'm asking for prayers for her. I'd love for you to dive in.
Yeah, I think that Canada provides the clearest example for Americans, because when I used to discuss, well, look what's happening in the Netherlands, some of which we've discussed and you just mentioned, people would say, well, the United States isn't the Netherlands, or what's happening in Belgium. In Belgium, for example, a transgendered person was unhappy with the surgery, and the answer was euthanasia. It truly is an abandonment. But in Canada, you now see people who are asking for euthanasia because they can't get access to the kind of medical treatment that they want. There have been at least two cases, of which I'm aware, and these have been reported by the Canadian press, of patients with cancer who wanted chemotherapy and wanted to have oncological care. And because it took so long to get an oncologist, they decided to be killed. I mean, this is, and you're also beginning to see stories in Canada. And the reason I bring up Canada is because they are our closest cultural cousins, of in the news media, of millions of dollars being saved in the healthcare system through euthanasia. There was a case that I found totally heartbreaking. An elderly woman was in a nursing home, and the COVID isolation hit, and she went through the first COVID isolation. It broke her heart because she couldn't be with her family, which was a terrible cruelty. And of course, that happened here in the States. And then that was lifted, and then there was going to be a second one. And she decided, I can't take this anymore. I can't do another several months without being with my family. And she asked for euthanasia. And the bitter irony was that while they wouldn't let the family be with her so she could live, they let the family attend her death. So family could be with her to die, but not to live. That's the kind of thing you begin to see with euthanasia.
Yeah, that isolation that is so significant, and then all of a sudden this flooding in of what will allow in this context, the community that people have been absolutely starved of. And whether it's that type of isolation that occurred during COVID or the isolation we're experiencing today because of the way we utilize technology, the way that jobs are structured, the way that families are so disconnected and isolated or going no contact, it's a very antithesis as people of faith of what we stand by in the fundamental dimension of human connection, human community, and even that word tolerance that is thrown around so often today, Wesley, yet so often people fail intolerance within the sometimes the most difficult relationships of those people in their immediate community vicinity, and especially their own family.
Yeah, I mean, this is basically opening the door to death on demand eventually. In Germany, as I mentioned, I think the highest constitutional court said that there's a fundamental right based on personal autonomy to commit suicide. There's a fundamental right to be assisted in committing suicide without regard to the reason. They said this isn't about health. It's basically whatever the person wants to die about. And there's a constitutional right to assist in suicide. Well, that's where we're going to end up. I mean, you get there, some get there sooner, some get there later. In the United States, we're seeing a slower progression because in the United States, the country as a whole hasn't swallowed the hemlock. And so you see activists say, well, it's about terminal illness. Well, it's not about terminal illness. And you already see in all of the states, or at least most of the states, that legalized assisted suicide, liberalization. So the strict guidelines that are, they say, well, we'll have strict guidelines to prevent abuse. As soon as it's legal, those guidelines are redefined as obstacles to the good death. Yes. And you begin to see the liberalization. Oregon has now said you don't have to be a resident of Oregon to have assisted suicide. Well, of what state interest is it to Oregon if somebody from Utah has assisted suicide? It's not about state interest. It's not. It's a nationalizing of the death agenda. And you want to hear an interesting irony. You brought up abortion earlier. There was a case in 1997, Washington v. Glucksberg. And 9-0, that was an attempt to create a Roe v. Wade for assisted suicide. But the Supreme Court ruled 9-0, which isn't common, that there was no constitutional right to assisted suicide. That precedent then became the primary reason why Roe v. Wade got overturned in the Dobbs case. So the attempt to have a Roe v. Wade for assisted suicide euthanized Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, that irony. And praise God that the line was towed. And that's what's interesting. You see a lot of California lawmakers who are still standing behind. They're not comfortable with allowing assisted suicide for the young, the healthy, or even people who are struggling with mental illness, because you are still healthy. You are still in the prime of your life. But just because there is this stymieing of what's happening in the brain doesn't mean that your life is less than. And that's what's startling. I was actually looking at the story. And if you're just joining me now, I'm joined by Wesley J. Smith. He's a chairman of the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. You can find him at discovery.org. That's discovery.org. And I was reading the story that came out just earlier this month on April 5th, Zareya her beak, and please pray for her and her soul. She was euthanized, 28 years old, at home on the 5th of this month. She was struggling with depression and was also on the autism spectrum. Her psychiatrist told her It's never going to get any better. Similarly, another one of the people who's considering and has planned suicide for this week, who's only 35 years old, she was also told and given the option of suicide. These people are receiving from their therapists and psychologists the recommendation to commit suicide. What happens when our own medical community, when our own therapists and psychiatrists are no longer exercising the treatment of helping people to live and are predisposed to believe that one, life isn't worth living, and if push comes to shove, things aren't going well in the therapy room, they're not seeing progress, they can recommend for years on end, and we're hearing these stories where for years on end, therapists are recommending that people commit suicide.
It's a corruption of the medical system. It's also a corruption, basically a euthanasia-assisted suicide corrupts everything it touches. In just about every state, and in California too, when somebody has an assisted suicide, that's not on the death certificate. What's on the death certificate is the underlying disease. So the doctors lie on the death certificate, and it totally makes it so you can't trace the issue. And it is a corruption of vital statistics. So there are, a couple of thousand, maybe a year, assisted suicides in America. Those are not included in the suicide statistics because they've been defined as not suicide in the law. But of course, suicide is what's going on. It interferes with the proper relationship with doctors. So people will say, well, this will only be done in the context of a very close medical relationship with your own doctor. Well, let's say you want assisted suicide. You come to me and I say, you know what? I don't do assisted suicide, but here are some things I will do for you. Oh, well, never mind. And so then they go to Compassion and Choices, which is the prime assisted suicide organization in the country. It used to be more honestly called the Hemlock Society. Mm-hmm. So they will recommend a ideologically predisposed doctor to do that for you. And some people have had assisted suicides who've only met the doctor maybe 2 weeks before they died. And now they're even doing assisted suicide by telemedicine. How's that for impersonal?
It's so sad that we have a system here in the United States where this is already being built into our system. It's been happening for the last decade or two in the States. It's not as obvious in the law, not as obviously understood, but this is a real challenge. And this is a challenge as people of faith. How do you help to communicate to someone that suffering is endurable, that the mental health challenges, the anxiety, depression, that we can come out of that? And I think this is part of the role we have to play, is that not just saying that life is worth living, but in showing and engaging in those relationships, especially with those who we know are isolated.
Absolutely. And that's the role of the church. That's the role of neighbors. That's the role of anybody who has a decent heart, is when we know that somebody is suffering the way Frank is suffering, we reach out to them and we try to help ameliorate their agony, to help them keep going. Because, there are a lot of people who wanted to commit suicide, many who might be listening now, who didn't and are very glad today to be alive. And that's also true of people who may have a terminal illness or a serious disability. In fact, the most vociferous opponents of assisted suicide are the disability rights community, because they say, we're the targets. And you know what? They're right.
Amen. If you're struggling, if suicide is something you consider, I want to make sure we share the suicide hotline, which is 988. That's a suicide hotline. 988. Wesley J. Smith with me here today on Trending. Thank you for joining me. If you'd like to look more into his work, you can find him at humanize.today. That's humanize.today. We're posting a link on social media as well as the episode notes. This is a topic we're just scratching the surface on. We'll be discussing more frequently as it continues to grow in a trend, especially among the young. So stay with me. We'll be coming right back to dive into some words, inspiring words of Saint Fidelis. We'll be right back.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Looking for a house, a loving spouse, a miracle or two? Bring your intentions to the 11th annual Walk to Marry, 21 miles through Wisconsin to the National Shrine of Our Lady of Champion. It's the only approved Marian apparition in the United States, and many pilgrims come back again and again for a powerful, prayerful experience. The walk includes a 14, 7, and 1.7-mile option along with the full 25-mile route and concludes with Mass. Join your parish family and Catholics from all over at the uniquely beautiful shrine nestled in the Wisconsin countryside for the spiritual pilgrimage of your year. Saturday, May 4th. That's Saturday, May 4th. Sign up at walktomary.com. That's walktomary.com. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio. Yesterday was the feast day of St. Fidelis, and I saw this quote come through of something he once said that really resonated with me, and I spent a while talking to my husband about it. I thought I'd share it today. The quote is this: "Woe to me if I should prove myself but a half-hearted soldier in the service of my thorn-crowned captain." In other words, what he's saying is St. Fidelis is giving the self-criticism toward himself, saying that there's this accountability that needs to be had if he fails in serving Christ. And he refers to himself as a soldier with Christ as his thorn-crowned captain. And it reminds me of the work and responsibility that each of us have to do. Each so different based on the gifts, talents, circumstances, and responsibilities we individually have. And at the same time, there's such a strong possibility to let go down Christ. That we will, day in and day out, multiple moments throughout our day. But that we're not supposed to let down our captain. I was talking to my husband, and he says, yeah, the one person you're not supposed to let down is God himself, and he's the thorn-crowned captain, as St. Fidelis mentions. And those words were really profound to me, the thorn-crowned captain. There's a image that my husband showed me a couple months ago. I'm going to actually make sure I have the right name. We're going to find it if not. And it's, I think, called the Two Crowns. And it's a icon. It's funny because you showed it to me. And yeah, it's called the Two Crowns. We'll post the link to it on social media. And it's this image of this king coming back from war. And he's on this huge, beautiful white war horse, and he has all these women at his feet, and the painting depicts him in his gold armor with his magnificent crown on his head, and they're celebrating. They're throwing rose petals at his feet as he's coming back from war. And as you're looking at this whole image, it's so funny, because it's like, this is the next painting I want. And I'm looking at it going, I couldn't get it. I'm like, what on earth? And then all of a sudden he says, look at his eyes. And you see the king, and the king has his eyes directed up to an image in the corner of the painting. And the image is the cross of Christ with wearing the crown of thorns, looking down upon this king. And even with all the fame and the glory and the women at his feet and the honor and respect and homage that's being given to him and this beautiful war horse, the symbol of power that he's riding, his eyes are fastened to the cross. And so the name of this painting is called The Two Crowns. We'll post a link to it on social media, The Two Crowns. I'm sending that over to my producer, Miranda, who's running social media today. And that's what it reminded us of when my husband and I were discussing this quote from St. Fidelis, that there's this self-criticism that St. Fidelis throws at himself, that woe to me if I should prove myself but a half-hearted soldier in the service of my thorn-crowned captain. Your thorn-crowned captain, Jesus Christ, is the captain we all have. And he is the one that has the highest authority in our lives. But at the same time, authority is the very thing we reject as a culture today. This criticism of anything that has structure, hierarchy, permanence, responsibility, requirements, the rejection of all that symbolizes those things. And Christ himself has been thrown out as well. Who are you to say that I can't commit suicide? Who are you to say that I can't have an abortion? It's Christ. That's why people ask me questions. What do you think about X? What do you think about Y? Well, what does the church teach? What does Christ himself teach? You look around the world, and although today we don't have the many monarchs that we did in time of old, it used to be that monarchs would wear crowns of glory, bejeweled in gold and precious stones, a representation of their ranking and dominion. And yet the crown that trumps all of these crowns is humility itself, humility himself, the crown of humility, and that is Christ. Authority really does matter to us as a culture, especially to men. This is partially why we reject it. But the one authority that we're meant to never let down is Christ himself. You should be okay with letting go of all the fear you have of what other people think, the opinions of others, and be more focused on making sure that we don't let down Christ himself, that thorn-crowned captain, that symbol of authority, as St. Fidelis says. St. Fidelis, pray for us.